God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in time of trouble. That's a reading of Psalm 46. And in Psalm 46, we have one of the greatest promises that God ever gave to man. We have within that promise the potential of great, thrilling acceptance and fulfillment. Or we have the potential of keen, bitter disappointment with God. Either way, it depends upon us. Because you see, God has promised you and me that He will be a very present help in times of trouble. So we sing the song many times, standing on the promises of God. And we hold on to that promise. But you may say, well, I took that check to the bank, God's check, His promise, and I tried to cash it, and God's check bounced. Because I had trouble, and I prayed to God, and I asked Him to take care of it, and He didn't answer. He was not a very present help in time of trouble, and therefore I am keenly disappointed with God. God did not meet, did not fulfill my expectations. And it is true that expectation is the key to disappointment with God. For God's got many ways of answering. And if He answers in a way that we don't expect, sometimes it frustrates us. Sometimes it disappoints us. Sometimes it causes us to doubt. Now, it is true that God on occasion has promised and has done it, that He's reached into men's lives and He has rescued them from their folly, and He has, with divine intervention, supernaturally pulled men out of the fire, pulled them out of the problem that they were having, and He's done it by His own power. The Apostle Peter, one night, looked out on stormy Galilee. And he looked out through the mists that were above the water there on that sea, and he saw what looked like somebody walking. But nobody can do that. Nobody can walk on water, but yet he was. And he looked out there and he said, Lord, if it be You, bid Me to come. Bid Me to walk to You on the water. Jesus said, come. So Peter, with triumphant faith, stepped out of the boat, stepped out onto the water, and he began to walk towards Jesus. And no doubt as he did that, many thoughts probably rushed through his mind. And he looked around, and he looked down, and he saw the water, and he said, I've never done this before in my life. Never walked on water. This can't be done. I can't do this. And immediately he started to sink. And when he started to sink, he cried out and he said, Lord, save me. Jesus just reached out His hand and He grabbed hold of Peter and He picked him up and He put him back in the boat. Sometimes heaven rescues us from our follies, our lack of faith. But I have to be honest with you this morning and say that the Bible teaches by every precept, by every example that I can find, that God only sometimes does it that way. From the Old Testament to the New, from Genesis to Revelation, it is taught repeatedly God only sometimes intervenes in a special way. And so if we're expecting every time we get in trouble, and I know Jesus is not going to be on the water and He's not going to physically take our hand, but we pray sometimes and it does seem as though at times things just automatically clear up and it's solved immediately. And we know that it's the power of God, the answer to prayer, but we are only pushed to believe that's going to happen sometimes. And if we're expecting that every time we get into trouble that God is going to be a very present help in that way, And he's going to reach in and kind of grab me by the hair of my head and yank me out of a bad situation and supernaturally overpower my enemy. We're expecting the wrong thing. And we're going to be disappointed with God. On the other hand, though, the Bible tells us it's entirely possible that when we ask God to be our present help in time of trouble, that he may see fit to rescue us in a different way. He may say, yes, we can get out of this thing. And I'm going to stress the we. You got into it. I'm going to help you get out of it. But there's something that he's going to demand of you over and over again throughout the Bible. God has invariably, it seems, supplied some power, but then he demanded some effort. Not that the effort ever equals the result, but he still demanded the effort just the same. From the time of a man named Gideon. Gideon had 32,000 men to save Israel. 32,000 soldiers to march with, to fight with. Totally unequal, totally outnumbered by the army they were going up against. But God said, it's too many. Get rid of some of them. Gideon got rid of 10,000 of them. I'm sorry, of 22,000 of them. And he had 10,000 left. God said, that's still too many. Get rid of some more. Gideon got rid of 9,700 more of them. And God said, oh, that's just right. That's just right, Gideon. 300 men. 300 soldiers. Totally unequal to the task. But God delivered Israel from the Midianites with Gideon and 300 soldiers. There were no strutting, arrogant Israelite soldiers in the camp that night. None of them going around saying, look what we did. Look how we delivered Israel. Give us the praise, give us the glory. No, they knew who did it. They knew God did it. They couldn't have done it with 300 men. God, even in working miracles, has always had a part for man. And that's why I believe in the book of 1 Corinthians, in the 10th chapter, when Paul is writing to that church and he tells them, he said, in all of temptation, in every trial, God always provides a way of escape. Now, did you get that? Do you get that? He provides a way of escape. There's an open door. There's always a way out. But mark it and mark it well. That's the 13th verse. Verse 14 says, flee idolatry. You see, God opens the door, but he doesn't push you through it. He opens the door, but he says, if you want out, that's how you get out. But you got to do the fleeing. You got to get up and you've got to do the moving. First, I open the door, but you've got to go through it. So when we deliberately sail into the teeth of the gale of temptation and then say, Lord, do something about it. He says, what you need to do is reverse your course. Turn around. Get out. Walk out. I'll make an opening for you. But you got to walk out. Unfortunately, though, God doesn't do either one of these. He doesn't supernaturally reach in and physically pull me out. He doesn't say, come on, let's you and me get you out of there. Let's the two of us together do something about it. He doesn't give us either one of these answers that we so fervently desire. Sometimes he just flat doesn't respond like I want him to. You know, it's tough when God doesn't answer your prayers. It's tough to be rejected at the door of mercy. Have you ever been rejected at somebody's front door when maybe you were going to go out and do some door knocking and campaigning to try to invite someone to worship? How do you feel when they slam that door in your face? How do they feel when they're rude to you? You know, when you get ready to do that, or when you get ready to deal with people in any way, really, somewhere along the way, you're going to be rejected. It may be when you tried to make that sale, if you're a salesman, and you tried everything you knew, but he just didn't buy. Maybe when you wanted to get that loan for that house, get that mortgage, and you wanted it so bad, they didn't make you the loan. Maybe when you were a kid growing up in grade school, and they didn't pick you for the team, and you were all lined up there, and they were picking back and forth, and when it was all done and the dust was clearing, you were still standing. Nobody wanted you for the team. Somebody somewhere along the way, politely or otherwise, politely, maybe rude, they've told you, no, I'm not interested. I don't want to buy it. I don't want to go with you to your meeting. I don't want you on my team. I don't even like you. Don't like your looks. Wish you'd just leave me alone. Quit bothering me. However you slice it, however you say it, it adds up to rejection. We don't like rejection. It's tough. It's real tough when God rejects us. When he says, I'm not going to answer that prayer, or at least I'm not going to answer it the way you count as answered. He answers them. I believe God answers every prayer, but sometimes the answer is just flat out, no. No. But that's still an answer. The Apostle Paul, I suppose, barring Jesus Christ, did more for the church, suffered more, sacrificed more, endured more, thought more, preached more, prayed more, was in anxiety more than any man who ever lived. But the Apostle Paul, as you heard read a moment ago, wasn't good enough to get every one of his prayers answered like he wanted it. Sometimes God said no. In fact, in 2 Corinthians chapter 12, as you heard read, he prayed to God and he had a problem. And the problem was he had a thorn in the flesh. Now, the commentators through the years have exhausted themselves in trying to decide just what that was. And they've guessed everything from epilepsy to bad eyes. They still don't know, sure. But I don't guess it makes any difference what Paul's thorn was. The point he makes is that it was physical. It was something wrong with the flesh. And it was probably painful. And it bothered him a great deal. If you've ever had a thorn in your finger or in your foot or somewhere, it makes the analogy that Paul uses here very, very appropriate, because even a small splinter in your flesh, if it's left there, it swells up and it might get poisoned, it might get infected, but it throbs, it hurts, it's ever present. And you know that it's there and it's agonizing to have it. The word used here in 2 Corinthians 12 for thorn, if you literally translate it, what it's describing is a stake, something you would drive into the ground, like a tent stake. So it was something that Paul, at least by the word he used, he was describing something fairly large. And that's why I think it probably gave him a lot of pain, a lot of agony. It was a fleshly problem that apparently Satan had a hand in. He describes it as a message or a messenger of Satan to torment Paul. As Satan told God when he tempted Job back in the Old Testament. Do you remember he took away first all of Job's possessions? He took away the family of Job. Then he took away a lot of other things that Job enjoyed. God spoke to Satan and said, see there, Satan, Job is my servant. He hasn't doubted. He's remained faithful through all of these things you've taken from him. Satan said, yeah, but you've kept a hedge around him. You haven't let me touch him physically. Let me touch his flesh, he'll curse you to your face. So Job's flesh was touched. He didn't curse God, but he was miserable. I'd suggest to you that when we're touched in the flesh, when we are afflicted in a physical way, we're affected as Paul was. And we start to pray and we say, God, take this away. Make me well. Get rid of this pain. It's bothering me. You say, well, how bad was it? It's bad enough he said he prayed 3 times. So it was bad enough he was persistent with it. And said, Lord, take it away. How reminiscent that is of Jesus in the garden when he prayed. He prayed 3 times also. He said, Father, if it's possible, take this cup away. I don't want to drink it. Don't like it. It's bitter. God said, no, son. You got to drink it. As the child says when he runs up and he's pulling at you and he comes again and again and again saying, can I, please, 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 let me. We know it's important. We know it's something that he wants to do so bad. Paul said, I asked the Lord 3 times, take it away, please. That was the prayer. Do you know God's answer? No beating around the bush, no evasiveness, no uncertainty. The answer was an unequivocal no. No. But I got this thorn in my flesh and I'd like to have it taken away. No. But it hurts. It hurts so bad. No. But I could do so many more things, Lord, for you. I could be a greater worker in the church, in the kingdom, if you'd just take it away. No, Paul. No. But why? Why, Lord? What will you do for me? And then God answers him in 2 Corinthians 12, verse 9. He says, my grace is sufficient for you. My grace is sufficient. In other words, God was saying, I'm not going to give you a lighter burden, but I will give you a stronger back. I will give you the strength to carry the load. Isaiah, the prophet, said in Isaiah chapter 40, verse 31, which was actually the song that Jonathan led us in. He said, they that wait upon the Lord shall mount up with eagle's wings. Listen to it now, joggers. If you like to run, listen to it. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not be faint. Wouldn't that be wonderful? Just to run and run and run and run and run and run and run. And never get tired. He says, they that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. Paul, God said, I will not take away the thorn, but I will give you the grace to endure it. I'll give you the strength to bear the load. I'll lift you up. Why? Why, Lord, must it be this way? Because my strength is made perfect in weakness. My plan is not just to keep everybody comfortable, but my plan is to keep everybody strong. And sometimes you have to do that by making them weak. We say, well, that doesn't make any sense. That doesn't seem real. Why in the world, why on earth would he have to do that? Well, in the 7th verse, I think, Paul puts his finger on it. Apparently, he gives us the answer. He had been talking back in the 11th chapter, if you dip back a chapter, he had been talking about all the Judaizing teachers and all these people who were trying to undo his work. Chunk rocks at the things he had been doing. And they were bragging about this and they were bragging about that. And Paul said, they were bragging, so I had to brag. But twice in the 7th verse, he said, lest I be exalted above measure. Lest I be exalted above measure, God gave me a thorn in the flesh. You see, God doesn't have much use for arrogant people. He doesn't have much use for conceited people. That's why in the Bible, people that are self-sufficient or think that they are, there's a danger, a warning that's given to them. In the Bible, men who have a lot of riches, Jesus says they stand in danger. Not because they can't serve, not because they can't obey, not because they can't be obedient, but because they stand in danger of getting too comfortable. Jesus said, if you get too comfortable, you don't rely on God. I would expand that a little bit and say the man who has the real high IQ has the same tendency to do this. The guy who says, I can figure this out for myself. I know the answer to this. I've got the smarts to be able to do this without God. I can do it very cleverly because I'm just that smart. God said, my strength is made perfect in weakness. Well, Lord, is that why you won't answer the prayer? Is that why you won't take it away? Yes. Yes. So that you are not exalted above measure, beyond measure. I don't want arrogance. I don't want pride. I want a humble trust in the power of God. And so some things, Paul, just have to be left. Well, okay. Does that apply to us? Does that apply to you and me today? I feel sure it does. Seems to me as we stand here today, we need to realize that though we have plans and we have goals, we need to realize there's going to be some burdens and problems along the way. And unless we realize that, we're going to be disappointed with God. And if we don't want to be disappointed with God when He doesn't do exactly like we think He should, then we need to realize His teaching along this line. We need to realize that He'll make us stronger sometimes. Sometimes through our struggles, the strains that we endure. Remember the Apostle Paul said in Philippians chapter 4, he said, I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether I'm fed or whether I'm hungry, whether I'm living in plenty or I live in want. He said, I have learned how to be content. You see, you don't get that by osmosis. You learn that by conflict and struggle. It's a strange thing, but have you ever noticed many marriages sometimes that thrive under adversity come completely unglued under prosperity? Two people, they're thrown together and they cling to one another desperately when the going is rough. But when success is at the door, they go their separate ways. Many a person's made it okay when things were hard, found it hard when things were easy. That's why James must have said in James chapter 1 verse 12, blessed is the man that endureth temptation, for he hath been tried, and he shall receive the crown of life. And I believe this morning it applies to us as a group, as a congregation, as a family of God here at West Park. I really do. I think we need to pause and think about it. We have a lot of goals. We're in the middle in the process, been talked about this morning, been, it's in your bulletin, of selecting and appointing the first elders of this church. We got five good men who've been nominated, that you nominated. That each one of them received 15 or more nominations. And I've been told by a couple of committee members that these men received a lot more than 15. And you suggested them. And we're going to be looking at them. You're going to be talking to them. You're going to be questioning them. The committee is. And we're going to go through this process. It's an exciting thing that we're involved in. We just had, just a few moments ago, a special contribution again today. We are in a desperate need of a permanent location, of some land and a building that we can use as we continue to go forward. We believe that the fields are ripe unto harvest right now. At this point in time, around us, right here in this community, and we want to do our part to enlarge the kingdom. We want to provide opportunities for our teenagers. We're going to have a meeting here in just a few minutes, right after lunch. We're going to be talking about that. Future of the teenagers here. Hope you'll stay. Hope you'll be a part of it. We want to provide the very best Bible classes possible for all of our children, all ages, as dedicated teachers spend their time and their effort trying to open up their little minds, not the teachers' little minds, the kids' little minds. I'll be sure I'm clear on that. But to open those precious little minds to the mind of God. And if you're visiting with us today, and you may have been visiting with us for a while, we're glad you're here, but we want you to know nothing would make us happier than for you to cast your lot with us and to embark on this exciting adventure with us. We are excited about the future. But as I say that, and as I describe all of that, there will be some disappointments along the way. There have already been some, and there will be more. And they appear to be setbacks because our plans don't unfold as quickly or as easily as what we had hoped. And disappointment is always accompanied by fear and doubt, discouragement. I would encourage us to keep in focus as we move ahead. Keep with clarity the reality of what we read and see in the Bible. When things don't always work out as we would have planned, we got to remember God is still in control. He still has the master set of plans. And He knows what's best. And we know by faith that's what He's going to do. Now, whether individually or collectively as a church, we need to remember that sometimes God just has to disappoint us because of what we need. Not what we desire, but what we need. Now, I'm not sure when the times come. I'm not sure which is which, and that's why we pray. That's why we pray. And we pray to God and we ask Him to help us. But we place our faith in Him. We don't know when He's going to supernaturally just reach down and solve the situation. We don't know when He's going to say, let's cooperate and let's do it together. We don't know when He's going to say no. No, none of those. I'll make you weak, so you'll have to depend on me. But ultimately, in the long haul, that'll be the best thing for you. We've just got to bear that and not get disappointed with God. The Bible teaches all three of these things. And when we expect God, yea, demand of God that He do it in a certain way, we just aren't reading our Bibles. We just aren't listening and understanding God's way. And I would suggest to you that if the Apostle Paul, as good as he was, as godly and spiritual as he was, if he couldn't get all of his prayers answered the way he wanted them all of the time, it's a bit unreasonable for me to think I'm going to. Along the way, as problems arise, we don't want to suffer any more than we have to. But if we have to grow and to grow stronger, won't it be great if together we can all pray that prayer, Lord, ease my burden if possible. But if not, give me a stronger back to carry my part of the load. We need more strong backs in the church today. This morning, if you desire that stronger back, if you want a closer walk with God, you want to come, we invite you to do so right now as we stand and as we sing.